Hello and welcome to another episode of Interview with a Schizophrenic. I'm your host, Duncan Samuel Singer, and today I have the great pleasure of having Ben. Ben is from Connecticut in the United States. He's 35 and he has a diagnosis for schizoaffective and ADHD. So welcome, Ben. How are you doing today?
I'm good today.
That's great, man. So, I know Ben from the internet. We've had quite a lot of interactions. So how are things in Connecticut? How is the weather over there?
Well, it's fall weather now, so it's nice. It's sweatshirt weather. I really like sweatshirt weather time. It feels very comfortable. And the sky is coming out. The sun is coming out. So it looks like a good day.
Yes, and I think autumn's got a nice atmosphere to it. It's still warm enough to go outside, and you get that. It's like you can dress in your knitwear. You can dress quite warm, and you can have a nice breeze. And it's like a fresh walk. You know, you get that freshness in the air. So I think that's good.
Yeah, you definitely get the crisp air in the sky.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start. As usual, my first question is always the same. So, Benjamin, what I want you to tell me and the listeners is to give a history of your mental health journey. You can go back as far as you see as relevant. I like to hear about what were the first symptoms, what happened, did you end up in a hospital or did you go and see a doctor? You know, all these sort of details are very interesting for me and the listeners. So if you'd like to start, that'd be great.
Okay, well, it starts at birth for me. I do believe I was born with schizophrenia, bipolar, and ADHD. And I have a history of addiction as well. And so when I was, stories from when I was before my memory, this is stories my mom told me. So for addiction, I dried her up 3 times while I was a baby. And I can remember as a little kid eating sleeves of crackers in one sitting. And in kindergarten, everybody's getting a Happy Meal. I'm ordering from the adult menu, getting 2 cheeseburgers and a large fry. Because food was my addiction as a little kid. That's where I took it to. So I also think all the other behaviors start coming up at a very young age. So in preschool, I was kicked out of preschool for biting girls and taking the batteries out of baby swings. So that's, again, before my memory. That story's from my mother. But getting kicked out of preschool is pretty tough to do. What I do remember is we're now in first grade. I remember being in the principal's office in first grade. So I'm already in trouble in first grade. And at home, I'm a mess. I'm a terror. And that's just how I am, how I was. I was very hyperactive. I was very impulsive. I was the kid that was behavioral problems all around. And there was no denying it. But my parents were anti-medicine, anti-doctors, anti the whole field. They didn't believe in any of that shit. They thought I was going to grow out of it. Sorry for my language. So let's go forward to middle school. In middle school, something happened. That was the first time that I don't know how to explain it, but I have a second personality, a second consciousness, a spirit consciousness, and I named it in middle school. It kept coming out, and I was a class clown. I was a major class clown, always had the distraction of teachers, but the kids, the students loved it. I said this personality was Murgle, so I changed my voice, and this Murgle character would take over, And that's important because at 15 years old, I didn't know any of this was a thing. I didn't know mental health or any of that. You know, I'm a kid. I'm just doing what I do. And at 15 years old, there's a major event. So at 15, I got into an argument with my mother. My father came downstairs, pushed me in the back. And my father was abusive my whole life. I have a memory, a third-person memory, where I'm watching it from the ceiling, but he threw me against the wall in front of my brother, and I actually clarified that with my brother this summer, and he said yes, he remembers that it did happen. So I have memories of being beaten as a child, and that carried on. But back to 15, he pushed me in the back, and I grabbed an extension cord, you know, a six plug outlet extension cord, and I beat him in the head with it over and over till he's gashed open, bleeding everywhere. Then my older brother came down to stop it. He tackled me. I finally got on top of him, and my dad somehow still had consciousness. He pulled me off my brother and pinned me to the ground, and his blood was coming down onto me, and I had his blood everywhere on me, and that was a very traumatic event, obviously, and that's one of the hard ones to talk about, but at that moment, he said, if you want to go, go. So I left the house at 15 years old. I was living on the street with friends, hopping couches and beds and wherever I could stay. My best friend took care of me the most. At 15, I was at my best friend's house one night. We actually slept. Usually we were up at night. We were doing illegal things. We were up all night doing our thing. But this night we went to sleep. At 3 in the morning, cops come in to the bedroom, wake me up, say, which one of you is Ben? I raise my hand, and they took me back to my parents' house in the front yard, where there are transporters. So I got the cuffs off from the police, and the cuffs went on from the transporters. And they sent me to a behavior modification school is what happened. You can look up this behavior modification school and read about it. It's very abusive. It was very traumatizing. It's called a WASP program. I forget how they spell it. It's either WWASP or WAASP. It's one of the two. But look up Tranquility Bay in Jamaica. That's the important one. At first, I was sent to Montana. They had a school in Montana. I was kicked out of that after 5 weeks. They kicked me out because they said I was a mastermind of a riot. They thought I was developing a riot. And I don't know if I was or not. But they said it, and they sent me to Jamaica. In Jamaica, it's called Tranquility Bay. That's the one you want to type in to find out what it is. They sent you overseas out of the territory, American territory, because there's less stringent restraining laws in Jamaica. So they would restrain us and beat us. They would, six of grown men would take you to the ground as a 15-year-old, and they grind your wrist, your elbows, your kneecaps, and your ankles into the gravel or into the cement, wherever you are at that time. And this behavior modification school, I never worked the program. I didn't believe in the program. They were talking inner child shit. And sorry again for the language. They were talking about inner child stuff and all this kind of programming stuff that I didn't understand and didn't want a part of. And I just continued with my bad behavior. I got in trouble quite constantly. I was in a place, we call it OP, which was basically solitary. And you get up there and you were faced to lay on your stomach or your back all day long on the floor, and don't move, and your hands by your side. That was how I spent a lot of my time, which it sucked.
I've looked it up. So I've got a website called WASP Survivors, and it says that the Tranquility Bay was a particularly harsh environment for these WASP programs. So yeah, I can see that there's a whole website about people who survived and want to talk
that's
about.
That's a funny word, because that's what it is. It's that I never looked it up myself or put it out that my story, because I lived it. I don't want to relive it. I know what happened. I was there. I dealt with it. I fucking sorry for the language. I was in OP quite often, so I know what happens. Yeah, if you guys look it up, you'll understand what I'm saying. Duncan can take
it. What I can do is I can put a link in the description for this episode to the website.
Okay.
So people can have. So obviously that is, you know, this is one of the most extreme things I've heard on this show. That you know, it's kind of like a Guantanamo Bay for kids.
Yeah.
So you know that's pretty horrific. So, did you eventually come back home? Did they let you out? And did?
So I was the trick was you had to work the program to get out, or you turned 18 and they released you because now you're an adult. I turned 16 in there. I was there for 10 months, and my mom came and got me out of there. I don't know why she did, whether it's a money thing or if she really did support me, I don't know. But I know I had to deal with it for as long as I did, and I held that against my parents for sure, because they sent me there. I already held resentment for my parents because they've called the cops on me before, and if you can't trust your parents, who can you trust? So I have major trust issues throughout my life. Well, 18 to 60. Oh, and also while I was there, one of the kids from Georgia, another state, Georgia, he actually taught me the recipe to methamphetamine. So that's the kind of place the kids were. That's the kind of kids that were in there. He was also a 15-year-old, and he knew the recipe to methamphetamine. But what happened is when I got out at 16, my parents were good with me leaving the house and me just doing whatever. I was out of school. I wasn't going back to school. I got to talk intelligence. So I'm a pretty above average intelligent kid. Troublemaker, but intelligent. When I took my SATs with a ninth grade education, I got a 1200 out of the 1600. So I went with a GED. I was actually accepted to any in-state college I wanted. But I didn't believe in college. I believe college was big business and just wanted your money. So I went to a community college later on in life. And I'm actually going to a community college now. But back to 16, I was in the streets, I was doing drugs like crazy, every type, all kinds, methamphetamine, all the hallucinogens, I was doing cocaine, I love my uppers and psychedelics, those were what I was attracted to. Which kind of makes sense because uppers have to do with ADHD, and it raises the dopamine, which gives me good feeling, and the psychedelics can just put me over the top with the schizophrenia. I mean, even the uppers would give me hallucinations because I was up so long. I'm up 7 days nonstop, no sleep, no food. You know, I'm seeing men walking their dogs clear as day, and my friends tell me it's not there. So I loved uppers and psychedelics, and then the major event. I was 18. 17 or 18. I want to say 18. I keep my storyline at 18 is why I say it happened. So at 18 years old, I suffered a traumatic brain injury, a TBI. I was at a party with my best friend, his neighbors. We didn't know him quite well. So I, my guard is up on this, but we didn't really know him that well, but we were partying, and it was a party. And but what happened is I got TBI. My friend was not around. He said he was in the bathroom throwing up. So the police report says I fell. But I know the type of people that were at that party, and I know how I get when I'm wasted. And I think it was an attack, not a fall. But I can't say anything for certain because the police report says I fell. And I'm blacked out, so I don't remember any of it. I woke up in the hospital days later. So this is 18 years old. I get my TBI. So I got neurologists doing brain scans, and then they take me to the psych ward. In the psych ward, they're doing the psychologist test and assessments. So I get a psychiatrist and a therapist assigned to me to work with me. This is where I learned I have these diseases for the first time. This is where I found out that I'm schizophrenia, bipolar, ADHD. This is before the DSM-5, so that's why I always separate schizophrenia and bipolar when I say it. But today you call schizoaffective, like Duncan said in the beginning, and that's what it is, schizoaffective bipolar type. So they try to put me on medication. Again, my parents are anti-doctor, anti-medication. So guess I am too. So they put me on Abilify, didn't work. They put me on Strattera the whole time. That was useless. And then they put me on Invega. There's a problem with this, though. I was sitting in the psychiatrist's waiting room, ready to go in. I see a woman walk in with Invega everything. She might as well have had an Invega visor on her. The bag was Invega. There was Invega binder. Mm-hmm. She walks into the psychiatrist's office, is there for 5 minutes, walks out, and then I go in, and he says, here's a free sample of Invega, take it, this is what we're giving you. So immediately I thought Big Pharma, and like it was like right in front of my eyes, and it was like Big Pharma. So I stopped everything and ran away. And I didn't trust the professionals at all from that point on, even more so than I already did it. And this lasted till the age of 30. I didn't really come around till 30 years old. But, all right, so I'm unmedicated, but I'm self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. But at 18, I stopped the drugs. Around that time, I may have taken a few things here and there, but it was alcohol at this point. I self-medicated with alcohol. I was just at home drinking. My best friend came to visit. This is like my brother, like we might as well have been blood brothers. We were so close. He came to visit, and I couldn't even look at him. I couldn't trust him. So because of that TBI, I couldn't trust anybody. I couldn't trust myself. That was the biggest thing I had to learn growing up, was I wasn't trusting myself. But I couldn't trust him. So I knew something was different. Something was definitely up in my head. Something was wrong. So I built walls. I got more untrustworthy. I got more... I couldn't trust people even more so than before. I was, and this is where you can say the paranoid schizophrenia started, because of that TBI. I couldn't do anything really. I really couldn't do anything at that stage. That was a hard one.
So I would say. So the traumatic brain injury, you know, that is going to increase psychosis, I would think.
Yes, it definitely affected it. It brought it out even more so. I have a story at 15 years old while I'm in Jamaica that I forgot to share. It's pretty big because it shows what I'm dealing with. So in the bedrooms, there's four beds to a room. One of my friends in there is in the same room as me, and we're standing there talking, and I changed my voice on an instant. I changed it to Murgle's voice, and I repeatedly say fire. So I like to compare this to the movie The Shining, or the book The Shining, if you've seen or read it. Little kid... name is Danny, and he'll go into a trance state, and he has a voice in the back of his throat, he says, called Tony. So that's basically what my Murgle is. So I changed my voice, and Murgle speaking, and he's saying fire repeatedly, fire, 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 fire. We go to bed. And we wake up early the next morning because there's a brush fire right outside. They got to evacuate us.
You serious?
Yeah, this is dead serious how it happened. And I actually forgot that I said it the night before until my friend reminded me, hey, you were saying fire last night. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I didn't think much of it. I mean, it was kind of... my normal. I was kind of like, yeah, that's what happens. That's my normal.
In terms of spirituality, you could be channeling, maybe not necessarily an evil spirit, but maybe a dark spirit, or just a normal spirit who. And you were channeling that quite purely at that time. Maybe you're dissociating from reality, and it was channeling out of you, you know. And in spirit world, time is non-linear, so you can experience precognition. There's always like a, you know, maybe like a few days in advance, depending on how it works. But so that it could have been an instance of channeling. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely get what you're saying. And it could take on a spirit. So I refer to Virgo as my guardian angel sometimes. I grew up Catholic till I was like 13. Then I left the church and didn't practice it ever again. But I'm big into spirituality. I call Murgle my guardian angel sometimes. I believe I have more guardian angels out there watching over me because of so many events where I should be dead. I am not dead. I keep waking up in the hospital. It's been like 7 times that I should have died.
Ben, I'm going to give us 5 more minutes. And then I think we can do a follow-up episode and we can talk more. So you've got another 5 more minutes, and then we'll cut this episode and we can do another one.
Okay. You want me to kind of just finish the story, get towards the end of it right now?
Yeah, yeah, go for it, man. You can talk as you go.
All right, so that was 18. So I'm going to skip my 20s, which is easy to skip. It was jails and rehabs. That's my 20s. It was just jails and rehabs because of alcoholism. Big time alcoholic up in Connecticut. And four DUIs. So after I get out of prison in 2017, we'll start there. 2017, actually that might tie me up. 2017 was I went to rehab, and I went to a Christian-based recovery center to read more of the Bible again and get it introduced again. But it's also a place that was sober. But this is, I'm going to fast forward to 30, and this is around the time I'm 30. I go back to the doctors. I know something's up. So I go back to the doctors and I start working with them. I start taking medications. This is where I realize schizophrenia is real. I can't deny it anymore. So I'm taking my medications and I'm in rehabs and, nothing's sticking. I cold turkey after taking them for a year. And I go right off and do my thing again. I don't like medications. Yeah. So I enter another rehab. There's many rehabs at this point because I'm trying to get it. I'm trying to understand what's going on and I'm trying to get help.
Is the rehab, is it through alcohol addiction or is it psychotic
mental? It's both. It's main goal is the addiction, but they want to help with the mental health at the same time because they're so connected. And I already knew my diagnosis. I could show them my diagnosis and all the events that happened in my life, and they would understand it's real. So they trusted me with when I told them I have schizophrenia, bipolar, ADHD. I have examples for everything since I was born. I have addiction issues that I can show you from when I was born. They trusted me. They put me on the meds. They helped me with the medications, or tried to. So we did medications in every rehab. We got back on new medications, different medications, kept trying it. And finally, we're at 33. I'm in my last rehab up to now. 33, something hit. I was in a motel room ordering poison. I was just drinking to pass out, wake up, drink to pass out, wake up, drink to pass out. I'm ordering cyanide. I'm ready at that time. But the cyanide did not make it to the motel room door before the taxi did. The taxi beat the cyanide, and that's why I'm still alive. The taxi took me to rehab, and this is the rehab I'm serious about. This is where I knew I had to figure it out myself. It took, with the help of professionals, but I had to figure it out. And so I was in rehab for 11 months this time. Okay. And I took it dead serious, and I took my medications. We kept changing them, finding what works, and I found a concoction that worked for the time being. It kind of kept me in a hypomania state, so I enjoyed it. Because I was up at 3 a.m. running 5 miles and then doing journaling and listening to music, and I was fine. And I liked it, but I liked it too much. And then, or I liked it, I thought I was good. I thought I was better when I got out of rehab. I thought I was good, so I stopped taking all the medications. And a couple months later, I have a psychotic episode again. And we can end it there, or we can keep going. Yeah.
Let's wrap it up here. Thank you for telling. Let's call it the first part of your story, because I think we'll come back for a second. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for talking about your story. I appreciate the honesty and the candor. It does take a lot of courage to do that. I think people who've gone through a lot of trauma in their life are naturally courageous. So thank you for that. Ben, I want you to give me an example of the music that you like so I can add it to this episode, like rock or electronic or anything like that.
I'm a big Red Hot Chili Peppers or 21 Pilots.
I know Red Hot Chili Peppers, sort of funky, rocky music.
Yeah.
Let me find something like that. Ben, you obviously have quite a lot to say, and I think we can delve more maybe into the mental health side in the follow-up episode. It's absolutely my pleasure to talk to you. So if you'd like to do that, that would be great. Do you have any apart from the WASP survivors website, is there any other links you'd like me to put in the description?
No, that's about it.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll
put that in the description so people can see for themselves what this sort of raging is that Ben went through. And that's it. So thank you very much, Ben. It was an absolute privilege to talk to you, and I look forward to meeting you again for the second episode.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you. Bye.